You will say, if it is true that God is displeased, why does he sometimes answer? I reply, sometimes the devil answers. But when God responds, he does so because of the weakness of the individual who desires to advance in that way. This person could become sad and turn back, or imagine that God is unhappy with him and becomes overly afflicted. Or there may be other motives known to God, prompted by that person's weakness, and because of which God sees the appropriateness of condescending with such an answer. God also does this in the extremely sensory communion that many weak and tender souls have with him, as was mentioned above. But he does not act thus because he is desirous or pleased that communication with him be carried on in such a manner. But God gives to each one according to each one's mode. He is like a fountain from which everyone draws as much water as the jug he carries will hold. Sometimes he lets souls draw water through these extraordinary spouts, but it does not follow that this is lawful, for it belongs only to God to bestow this, when, how, and to whomever he wills. And for whatever reason he desires, and without any right on the part of the soul. Accordingly, as we asserted, he sometimes condescends to the petition of certain individuals. For since they are good and simple, he does not like to let them go unanswered, lest they become sad. But that he hears them does not mean that he is pleased with this practice. Here is an example to illustrate this truth. A father of a family provides at table many different kinds of food, some better than the other. One of his children will ask for a dish, not of the better food, but of the food that meets the eye, and the child will do so because it knows how to eat this kind of food better than the other. Now, when the father observes that the child refuses to eat the food offered to it and wants and likes only the first dish, he gives it to his child sadly, so that it will not become unhappy and go without its meal. This is the way God acted with the children of Israel when they asked him for a king. He gave them one regretfully, because it was not good for them. Thus he said to Samuel, I heard the voice of this people and granted them the king they requested, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I might not reign over them. 1 Kings 8-7. God accordingly condescends to some souls by granting what is not the best for them, because they are ignorant of how to journey by any other way. Some souls obtain sensible or spiritual sweetness from God because they are incapable of eating the stronger and more solid food of the trials of the cross of his Son. He would desire them to take the cross more than any other thing. I consider the desire for knowledge of things through supernatural means far worse than a desire for spiritual gratification in the sensitive part of the soul. I fail to see how a person who tries to get knowledge in this supernatural way, as well as the one who commands this or given consent, can help but sin, at least venially, no matter how excellent his motives or advances and perfections he may be. There is no necessity for any of this kind of knowledge, since a person can get sufficient guidance from natural reason, and the law and the doctrine of the gospel. There is no difficulty or necessity unsolvable or irremediable by these means, which are very pleasing to God and profitable to souls. We should make such use of reason and the law of the gospel that even though, whether we desire it or not, some supernatural truths are told to us, we accept only what is in harmony with reason and the gospel law. And then we should receive this truth, not because it is privately revealed to us, but because it is reasonable, and we should brush aside all feeling pertinent to the revelation. We ought, in fact, to consider and examine the reasonableness of the truth when it is revealed even more than when it is not, since the devil, in order to delude souls, says much that is true, conform to reason, and that will come to pass. In all our necessities, trials, and difficulties, no better or safer aid exists for us than prayer and hope that God will provide for us by the means he desires. Scripture counsels this where we read that King Jehoshaphat, deeply afflicted and surrounded by his enemies, when means are lacking and reason cannot find a way of providing for our necessities, we have only to raise our eyes to you, that you may provide in the manner most pleasing to you. We have already pointed out that even though God sometimes responds to these requests, he is angered. Yet some proofs from Scripture will be helpful. In the first book of Kings, we read that while King Saul was requesting a locution from the prophet Samuel, who was already dead, this prophet appeared, yet God was angered, because Samuel immediately reproved Saul for having made such a plea. Why have you disturbed me by making me revive? We are also well aware that, though God answers the children of Israel in providing the requested flesh meat, he was nonetheless seriously angered. According to the Pentateuch and David's account, he immediately sent fire from heaven as a chastisement. While the morsels were yet in their mouths, the anger of God descended upon them. We read too in the book of Numbers that because the prophet Balaam went to the Midianites at the beckon of King Balak, God was extremely provoked with him. As a result of Balaam's request, God had told him to go. Yet while he was on his way, an angel appeared carrying a sword, desirous of killing him, and saying, "Your way is perverse and contrary to me." Numbers 22:32. Because of this perversity, the angel desired to kill Balaam. God, though angered, condescends in this and many other ways to the desires of souls. Scripture affords many testimonies and examples of this fact, yet it is unnecessary to cite them, since our affirmation is so clear. I only say that the desire to communicate with God in this way is extremely dangerous, more so than I can say. The man attached to such ways will go far astray and often become greatly bewildered. Anyone who has esteemed them will understand what I mean through his own experience. beside the hardship of avoiding any error resulting from God's locutions and visions, there is also the difficulty of discerning those communications which the devil causes. For as usually have resemblance to God's, he imparts facsimiles of God's communications, so that disguised among the flock like the wolf in sheep's clothing, his meddling may be hardly discernible. Since the devil, through conjecture, makes many reasonable manifestations that turn out to be true, people may be easily misled, thinking that the revelations must then be of God. These people do not realize the ease with which the devil, with his clear, natural light, knows, through their causes, many past and future events. Since his light is so vivid, he can easily deduce a particular effect from a specific cause. Yet the effect does not always materialize according to his deduction, since all causes depend upon God's will. Here is an example. The devil perceives that when the earth, air, and sun have reached a certain interrelationship, they will necessarily at that time become corrupted and thereby cause a pestilence. He is also cognizant of the area in which the pestilence will have grave and those in which it will be mild. The example, then, is that of a pestilence known in its causes. Is it a wonder, then, that the devil's prediction about a pestilence due within 6 months or a year come true? Yet it is a prophecy of the devil. Similarly, observing that the cavities of the earth are being filled with air, he can foresee earthquakes and predict that at a particular time there will be an earthquake. This is natural knowledge for which an intelligent free of the passions is sufficient, as Boetius teaches. If you want to know truths of natural clarity, cast aside joy, fear, hope, and sorrow. Supernatural events can also be known in their causes, since the divine providence responds most certainly and justly to what the good or bad causes arises from the sons of man demand. One can know naturally that a particular person or city or some other factor will reach such a point that God in his providence and justice must respond in conformity with the punishment or reward that cause warrants. With this knowledge he can say, at this particular time God will certainly give this or do that, or that some other event will ensue. The holy Judith made Holofernes aware of this when, in order to persuade him that the children of Israel would be destroyed, she first related their numerous sins and evil conduct, and then added, because they do these things, it is certain they will be destroyed. This represents knowledge of the punishment through its causes. It is like saying, surely such sins must occasion certain punishments from the most just God. And divine wisdom says, each one is punished in and through that by which he sins. Wisdom 11:17. The devil knows this, not only in a natural way, but also from having observed God do these things, and he can conjecture and announce the outcome correctly. The holy Tobias also knew through its causes the coming chastisement of the city of Nineveh. He warned his son, "Behold, son, when your mother and I are dead, depart from this land, because it will no longer remain. I see that its very evil will be the cause of its punishment, the end and destruction of everything." Tobias and the devil were able to come by this knowledge not merely through the wickedness of the city, but through experience. In observing that the Ninevites possessed the sins which occasioned the destruction of the world by the flood, and of the Sodomites by fire, Tobias, however, also knew this through divine inspiration. The devil can learn and foretell that Peter's life will naturally last only a certain number of years, and he can determine many other events through such various ways that we would never finish recounting them, nor could we even begin to explain many, because of their intricacy and the devil's craftiness in asserting lies. One cannot be liberated from him without fleeing from all revelations, visions, and supernatural communications. God is rightly angered with anyone who admits them, for he sees the rashness of exposing oneself to this danger, presumption, curiosity, and pride, and to the root and foundation of vainglory, to contempt for the things of God, and to the beginning of the numerous evils into which many fall. These individuals so stir God's wrath that by giving full scope to their vanities and fantasies, he purposely allows them to go astray, suffer delusion and spiritual darkness, and abandon the established ways of life. This is like saying, "The Lord has mingled in their midst the spirit of dissension and confusion," which in plain words means the spirit of misunderstanding. Isaiah manifestly says this in accord with our teaching, since he refers to those who are striving for supernatural knowledge of future events. As a result, he asserts that God mingled in their midst a spirit of misconstruing everything, not because he desired this, nor really gave them the spirit of error, but because they were desirous of knowing what was naturally unattainable. Provoked by this, God allowed them to go astray, and gave no enlightenment concerning this matter, in which he did not want them to meddle. Thus Isaiah proclaims that negatively God commingled the spirit of dissension. Accordingly, God is the cause of that harm, that is, the privation cause, which consists in such a withdrawal of his light and favor that they necessarily fall into error. In this way, God permits the devil to blind and delude many, who merit this by their sins and audacities. The devil is able and successful to the extent that others believe what he says and considers him a good spirit. So firm is their belief that it is impossible for anyone who tries to persuade them of the diabolical origin, for which God's permission they have already been affected by the spirit of misunderstanding. We read this, that this happened to the prophets of King Achab, whom God allowed to be deluded by the spirit of prevarication. He permitted the devil to do this, saying, "You shall prevail with your lie and deceive them. Go out and do it thus." The devil deceived the prophets and king so successfully that they were unwilling to believe the prophet Micaiah, who spoke the truth in contradiction to what the others had prophesied. That God allowed them to be blinded is the explanation of their unbelief. For in their attachment, they wanted events to happen and God to answer according to their own desires and appetites. This was the surest means and pronation for God to abandon them to blindness and deception. Ezekiel prophesied about this in God's name. He ensures the curious one who in vanity of spirit desires knowledge in a divine way. I myself, the Lord, shall answer, and I will set my angry countenance upon that man, and when the prophet shall err in his reply, I, the Lord, have deceived that prophet. Ezekiel 14:7-9. This signifies that God does not concur with his help to prevent that man's deception. Such is the meaning of the words, "I, the Lord, angered, will myself answer. Withdraw my grace and favor from such a man." Deception necessarily follows when one is forsaken by God. The devil intervenes, answering in harmony with that person's desire and pleasure. And since the devil's replies and communications are pleasing and satisfactory, the individual will let himself become seriously deluded. We have seemingly wandered somewhat from the matter proposed in the title of this chapter, proofs that although God answers, he sometimes becomes angry. Nevertheless, if everything we mentioned is thoroughly considered, it will contribute to the proof of our assertion. Our explanation points to the fact that God is displeased with desires for these visions, since as a consequence, he permits souls to suffer diverse delusions.